All right. We've had a very unusual shear. This wasn't a standard kind of shear because it was basically a continuation of the Inyanim of Purim. We spoke about Sav as the Hashmini, as the closure of the Purim ideas because of its focus on the rebuilding of the Mishkan and the Kedushas HaMishkan, which was, of course, the whole point of Purim. And, there's two points we'll talk about. And why? Which is the other issue of Purim. There's the takona of the Psume Bepuria, and the fact that Esther uses the Mishnah Yayin, as the Gemara points out, Bechumam Ashitat Med Mishtayim. And it was Bedavka through wine that it's achieved. And we were troubled by what appears to be the contradiction. In other words, we have over here the siyum of the creation of the Mishkan, and it turns out that it's only through dechia of wine, the yain v'shechar alteisht, that we're able to have the kedushat haMishkan defined here. And yet, when it comes to Purim, which is exactly dealing with these issues, because lemaisa, Purim comes to be metakein, first of all, what was wrong in Har Sinai, because the Totsa'a of Purim is Kimu v'Kiblu Ayudim. So you have that Kimu v'Kiblu is Mitaken, what was originally considered to be a Modo Rabbali Oraita, which is Kafali and Har Chagigit, in which people felt that they had been forced or raped, as the Maharal puts it, into Kabbalat HaTorah. And for some reason on Purim, which is a story of rape in terms of Esther, we learn that that's not a Chisaron, we're Mekabel Kimu v'Kiblu, and the other thing is the yisod of the Beit HaMikdash should be rebuilt, which was the whole point of Purim. The taking out the Kalim of the Beit HaMikdash, the Shushan HaBirah, the At Chatziah Malchut, all of these inyanim were because they were right in the middle of the period of the Pekida, the original Pekida, the time of Koresh, and the Ketav Sitna, which was involved with Haman's own son, own family, with Shamshai. And with the rebuilding that was necessary that came about through the downfall of Haman and so on. Of course, the other pella is that these two things are fundamentally interrelated. Kimu v'Kiblu and the reconstruction of the second Beit HaMikdash is precisely what our parish is about. Because the kilkul on Har Sinai on one level was the Kafaleim Har Chagigit, and therefore we need Kimu v'Kiblu to be metakein that aspect. But that aspect itself was a totsah of the only thing that is openly wrong with Har Sinai. And what's openly wrong with Har Sinai is the fact that Vayechazu Atayim Vayochlu Vayishtu. Moshe makes reference to that in this week's parsha when he tells Aaron, oh, that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu meant when he said Bikrovaya Kadesh. And that was actually at the time of Har Sinai where they were mechuyev to be killed because they did the same thing on Har Sinai that they did here in the Mishkan, which is went a little too far on their own. So that was the Vayechazu Et Elohim. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, as the Midrash puts it, look, I don't want to ruin the simcha of my daughter. The Torah is like a daughter to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I'll ruin my own simcha. So it's b'yom simchat libo, b'yom chatunato, b'yom simchat libo. So fine. My simcha, I'm willing to ruin. So the Kiddush of the Mishkan, which is the Beit Hashem, the place of the Shechina, that all ruins. In other words, these two things are completely interrelated here in the Parsha of Shmini. Not coincidentally, they're related back in Purim as well, for the same reason. We need to deal with what's wrong on Har Sinai in order to be able to build a Mishkan. Ultimately, the Mishkan is meant to take the place of Har Sinai, because as the Psukim say, Beferish, Kasher Horeta Bahar. You're supposed to be recreating that which you saw on the Har. So I'll show you the Kalim of the Beit HaMikdash and so on. Many, many Midrashim talk about the Degolim on Har Sinai, connected to the Degolim in the Machan, and so on. The Kalim of the Beit HaMikdash, connected to the Giluyim that were seen up on Har Sinai. So that what we're attempting to do is Yarado di Lagano, is a reconstruction of what happened on Har Sinai itself. And so what's astonishing is that in the original story, which is here in Shmini, the tikkun was in terms of Yayin v'Shechar al Teisht. And therefore, it's absolutely crazy to have the the tikkun on the Purim, but davka through shliat yain. Although the whole idea in this week's parasha ends up being as a result of the yain b'shachar al teisht, is we have the definition of mefitzes, which ends up being the nature of havdalah. So the end of the parasha is lahavdil bein hakodesh, bein hachol, bein hatameh, bein hator, bein hachaya ne'echelet, chaya she'ina ne'echelet. This, the whole din of havdalah and havchana on that level is introduced here, so that the kahuna now takes on a whole new element of havdalah in it, which relates back directly to the yain b'shachar al teisht. Therefore we say, yain b'shachar al teisht, ula havdil, darshins the Gemara, that mikan, that somebody who was shaysa yain, is not allowed to be meira, because he can't be mavdil. And then again, we see adarabah, that we were koveya havdol ala yain, bedavka, which is it seems to be a pagah. In the same way that we do on Purim, we end up doing over here, halacha lemaisa. So that means that the contradictory elements that we find in yain, in which those contradictory elements are expressed in the paradox of the opening word of the parsha, which Chazal bring out, which is the Vayehi. So Vayehi means it was a time of tremendous tzar, even though it was a time of the greatest simcha. So lo hoya yom shesamacha kadosh baruch hu ba'olamo, except for the beginning, which was Yisbach Hashem b'ma'asav, and this day, in which now the Mishkan is built and the world is shalom. But as the Medrash points out, how long does that last? 5 minutes. So if you have over here right away, the whole simcha is destroyed by Nadav Aviyu. The same thing happens by Maaseh Bereishis. HaKadosh Baruch Hu finally finishes the Yoylam, creates the Yadam. So what does he do? An hour later, he screws up the whole thing and gets himself thrown out of Gan Eden and so on. So says the Medrash, so what do you expect? If the simcha for HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in Mamtin Lo, as you expect for a human being, it should be Mamtin Lo. So that's why Yibayom HaShemini, take a look, was there ever a happier woman in the world than Elisheva? I mean, here she has, her husband has been appointed now the Kohen Gadol, her children are now the Sigame Kahuna, and they are the ones in charge of all Shevet Levi, and her brother-in-law is the Melech, and I mean, it's like she's her sister-in-law is the Nevi'ah for all of it. It's like you can't get better than that. You know, as I say, it's as good as it gets. And what happens with as good as it gets? It lasts for 5 minutes. And then you have the same exact, the Vatered Eish Ben HaShemayim, Vatochal, Achalavim, and so on, Vayara'am, Vayaruna, wow, it's unbelievable. And then one pasuk later, it's Vatetzei Eish, the same Lashem, Vatetzei Eish Ben HaShem, and it eats up not the Korbanos this time, but not of Aviyu. So how long did a simcha last? Avi Omer She'in Simcha Mamtenet Lo La'adam, and that's true about HaKadosh Baruch Hu as well. Now, that aspect seems to be, what they seem to be saying, is that there's some type of paradox in Maaseh Bereishis itself, in which it's impossible to have a moment of Ashlama without screwing it up. Right? And we find this is constant, I mean, it's a refrain. Because the moment we ever have something that's going well, we always manage to screw it up. The Medrash keeps bringing examples of this kind of thing, in which you'd think that you're reaching the end of a process, and there it goes, something happens, you know, you're about to come into Eretz Yisrael, and gee, something happens, so it takes 40 years. You're bringing the Aron into the base, gee, something happens, and somebody screws up, so they get killed, and now David's miserable. Exactly the same story happens over here, but just keep. It seems to be a refrain in my separations. Is there something wrong? I mean, God can't get things straight, that it constantly has to be messed up, and there's a pagam in my separations, which is paradoxical. That goes back to the nature of yayin itself, because we find in Chazal, again and again, a dualism in terms of wine. So we have the lemi vai, lemi oy vai, and that darshan's the vai. But if a va yachal noach yishadam, a va yitak herem, goes to all of the different vais, in the chadavar shemivim, vai lo olam, ela hayayin, you know, tenu shechar lo oved, a whole list of various things, you know. And on the other hand, we find that we kovei all of bracha, all of our kosher bracha, avdol, our kiddush as ala yayin, and the lo nivra yayin,
Ela l'nachem is habriyas, is supposed to bring a person to simcha. We have to have yayin with the karbonas because the yayin is misameach Elohim v'adam. The Gemara says, im adam misameach, Elohim b'ma misameach. They say, okay, there's an issue of shira, dafka l'yayin, and that's, you know, le'el iskadesh chag, and so on and so forth. Our whole, as we're about to taste on the Pesach, our whole Yetziah from Cheres is a function of wine. We had in today's Gemara Manish, what is the schar ayin lo ra'atel im zolatecha? Is yayin that's mishum rabah mishesh kamei bereshit? I mean, it's clearly something that's unique about wine that is meant to be in terms of the hatava sa'ilam and not only the destruction. And we on Purim, we had discussed at great length the Zohar that discusses the way that Nadav Aviu and Noach were both mechavin for it to be metaken yayin, not that they weren't idiots. In other words, they recognized that the pagam of the Eitz Hadad was through wine. And that was that's the riot room. It's a double parsha. It must be a wine. It must be a vine, because what else makes problems in the world, you know? And so it must be that they had set out to be metaken. Noach messes up, and he's unable to achieve this tikkun. But even though he brought it specially in the teva with him in order to be, he's going to start a new world the right way. So what happens by Yochanan Isha Adama? What? You too? Isha Adama like Adam Arishon. Okay? So come along, Nadav Aviv, says the Zohar, where do you think they had wine from? But they're idiots. Who brought them wine into the Mishkan? I mean, that's insane. Obviously they had it ready. They wanted to drink the wine. So on the contrary, they held that they were capable now of doing this tikkun that the wine was going to end up achieving. And they also screwed up. But Lomaisa, I mean, if we're metaken for Abdullah, it appears that we constantly try to do this. And under in the Purim Shir, I mentioned the Tanchuma that says this is why we say L'chaim. That's why we say Sabrai. What's the reason for saying Sabrai? Is because we're sensitive to the fact that wine is Mekalkal. So we're not going to be Kovea the wine on the mitzvah. We have to make sure that the Tzibor understands that we're doing something dangerous. So what is your thoughts? Is this L'chaim or L'mavet? Because wine can go either way. And therefore the tzibur was supposed to answer l'chaim, so that it should be a davar tov.
I tried afterwards.
No, that's not a joke. You know, I mean, it's another indication. It's can you come back down, and what does it do? What does it do for your life, l'maisen?
Survive to do it.
Hey, that's cute. That's a beautiful one. Sabrai and sobriety. Okay. Then I think we went off for a moment and discussed the nature of wine in why it would be meaningful for Havdalah. Then we pointed out that the concept of discrimination, which is Havdalah, was originally used in the sense of the connoisseur's ability to discriminate. So that the only thing on earth that is similar to Adam, Mamish, in terms of the need for discrimination is wine. There is nothing else. It's not the alcohol that Chazal are aiming on here. It's the wine particularly. Our word connoisseur. First of all, the word connoisseur comes from the word cognizance. Connoisseri. It means the knowing ones, the knowledgeable ones. So that's das. So we understand the relationship of yayin and sod, which the Gemara talks about, that yayin is kenegedas, the nichnas yayin, yatsa sod, and so on. But this is part of the very word for discrimination. Discrimination means Abdullah, which is unbelievable. It means that the nature of wine is that it's nogea Abdullah in its essence. Why is this true? Because, and why does it relate to Purim so fundamentally? Remember that Mordechai says to Esther, "Mi odeim la'et kazot igat l'malchut." Now, what's he referring to now? The entire history of Sheol and the loss of the Melucha l'Reyacha Tov Mimecha, and the fact that it was Haman's existence that was only because of an extra night that Agag lives, and that's due to Sheol's interference, and they accepted not to kill Agag for that night. What harm's going to come of it? So this is to show the implication of the Tzivei Hashem L'Dayreis. I mean, we're talking about over here hundreds of years of a history and so on. That's again. There's only one thing in nature that's not dealing with emergent elements, but directly the earth itself in which we find this expressed. That's wine. Only in wine do we have the idea of a vintage. And the idea of a vintage is that the complexity of the interrelationship of factors, which include not only the history of the evolution of this particular zan of grape, which is meduyak ad lahafli. I mean, you're talking about a zan of grape in the way in which, in terms of human evolution, we would talk about not only race, which, I mean, is a very, very tiny type of thing. I mean, to discern in terms of DNA differences in race is kimat not shaya. To define differences in family is way beyond our technological capability. And yet here you're talking about a subspecies which is a further sub of a sub and so on, in which this particular grape was developed in this particular way, and no other grape has this specific time. Forget about the grape itself. Each year is different. Why is each year different? Because it's a function of it's a function of the amount of sunlight that year, and it's a function of the amount of rain that year, and runoff that year, and the interrelationship between those factors, and the temperature, and so on and so forth. I mean, there should be no way to predict in advance what it is that the vintage is going to take or going to be like. Furthermore, forget about what happened that year. What happened during the 5 years in which the wine was in the cask? Which particular microorganisms were involved in the fermentation of the wine? And what was the history of that fermentation in terms of its in terms of the weather, and then in terms of the dampness and the temperature and so on, which we attempt to control as much as possible in order to get the same results. You buy a bottle of scotch, and you know the scotch tastes like this. You buy a bottle of wine, you have absolutely no way of knowing. Every year there's a meeting of thousands of people from all over the world, every year, in which for a week they sit together and they taste the tozos of the vintages of that year to determine the value of the various vintages. There's absolutely no way to predict that. So you're talking about things that are of immense level of complexity, not to mention, that's weather factors, storage factors, climate factors, biological factors, not to mention the mokum. Each mokum has its particular connection to the grape which grows in it. I mean, we read about in the Gemara Becheiros, the relationship of a human being to the offer from where he comes, you know, the story of the Atuna, the Zikne Yovan story over there, where he throws the dirt from their country on them and it changes their psychology. I mean, we think it's crazy. Over here you have, mamish, the history of a particular spot on earth, which is nogea, millions and millions of dollars. Somebody attempts to use to call a wine, I'll shame a mokum where that wine grew, where it didn't really grow in that mokum. You're talking about court cases for hundreds of millions of dollars that are done in Lamaisa, not theoretically. So that the relationship of the specific place,
history.
What?
Which is history in
the sense. Of course it's history. It's history of the earth itself. So in other words, every last possible element of the complexity of its interrelationship, which is exactly what Mordechai is telling Esther. Look, I can't tell you, but I could see there's so much involved over here. I mean, me, day and night, it's an unbelievable thing. The only place where we find such a level of discrimination is in wine itself. So then we pointed out that the tikkun of Mordechai seems to be in two completely different areas. One is the area of the tikkun of the Modor Rabba L'Oraisa, which is the acceptance of Teresh Bal Peh. And the other is in what it is that he goes out to create. But Mordechai Yehudi goes out to create a tikkun to the experience of Avodah Zarah. Right? And sometimes this gets lost. But remember, he's only called Mordechai Yehudi because Kol HaKofer B'Avodat Kochavim, Nikra Yehudi isn't really a Yehudi. He's from Binyamin. So the verse is Kol HaKofer B'Avodat Kochavim, Nikra Yehudi. The whole story of enraging Haman, because Haman had set himself up as an Avodah Zarah, and the Reb Shimon Bar Yochai is tracing the story of Purim back to the original Ishtachavaya, the time of Hanani, Mishael, Azariah, to the Tzelem. It's clear that this is fundamental to what it is that he's doing that allows us a recreation of Beit HaMikdash in the context of the destruction of the Yetzer for Avodas Kochavim that happens later when they actually get back, rebuild, and then Ezra and the Nehemiah are Mevatel the Yetzer of Avodas Kochavim, as the Gemara describes. This is all Mordechai Yehudi's doing, which goes together with the appearance for the first time in the Anshe Knesset HaGdolah, the Ramazir HaTorah LeYoshna. The reason the Ramazir HaTorah LeYoshna is because they find in Hester their greater Giluyim, correct? Because originally they took out Ha'el HaGadolah Gibor Vanora gradually, because they felt the failure of Galut is a failure in the Giluy HaShchina. So the Hester, how can you say God that? Because what, the Goyim are dancing around to the Beit HaMikdash, you're going to call God Nora. I mean, it's a joke. I mean, you can't say something. And how can you change it? Moshe Rabbeinu said it. So Gemara says they change it because they know that God is honest and he doesn't appreciate people who aren't honest. What are we going to say? He's great? He's not great. We can't call him great. Says the Gemara. But then come along the Anshe Knesset HaGdolah and they said, no, that's great to be able to tolerate that kind of thing because it needs to be tolerated. That's great. So therefore we'll call him great. So obviously that's similar to the idea of Sof Kol HaNisim. In Hester itself, that's Esther. Esther's Hester. She ends up writing the Megillah, which is to be Megala. So that's exactly this thing. They find in the Hester itself the Yilud. What do they do? The Anshe Knesset HaGdolah. So we, again, we just had in Daf Yomi. They were Metakein ritual. So they're Metakein Kiddush and Avdolah and Brochas and Tvilas and so on. So that they made an entire mode of behavior in which an individual no longer does what it is that he understands and how it is that he would spontaneously be in the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they have it all worked out. You would think.
And how dastard people will work. They tell you, be mapped like this and speak like this.
Like this. Yeah, whatever. That's not Nogeh this year. Particularly. So, you would think that on the contrary, that type of thing is more likely to degenerate into Avodah Zarah. The whole tikkun is Avodah, the last thing that you want is a religion. What they did was they were miyasid, a religion, which hadn't existed until that point, right? So, and indeed, I mean, the difference between Yahadut, we call Yahadut the religion of the Yehudim. Right? As opposed to Yisroel, we understand it's a different idea. Yisroel is an overall relationship to the Rishis, Bishvilis, Roshnik, Rishis. On that level, it has nothing to do with religion. That's certainly what the Nazis focused in on, right? They didn't care, you're religious, you're not religious, you were baptized. What's the difference? You're one of them. It's the Elders of Zion phenomena. They're not even religious as far as we're concerned. They're just going out to take over the world. That aspect of Rashis is what you would have expected to find when you're dealing with Mordechai fighting on Moloch, right? Instead, we find that he goes out to be with that kind of religion. What was the point of the tikkun of the religion? So I'm just reviewing briefly the Yesodos that we spoke about at the Purim Shir, but this Nogeh, this parasha, very profound. So what it is that he set out to be Metakein was to recreate Maimed Har Sinai in its experiential level. Because what had happened was that Maimed Har Sinai had become now a function of how it is that we relate to it, my awareness of it, as opposed to my experience of it. And the difference is, it's a very, very delicate difference, the difference is that consciousness which exists on the cutting edge of the distinction of Kodesh V'chol, or Or V'choshech, or losing time into the past, and time approaching in the future, which is where most people experience their life, which is a cutting edge that doesn't even have a place, because by the time you're aware of it, it's already over, and that is generally how people identify their life. They live in that area, and they think that anything else is that. Either they haven't lived it yet, or it was already lived, but that's not my life. Right? So they relate to something called a life. This is their life. That aspect is indeed the Havdalah, which is destructive for wine. Why is that? Because that Havdalah indeed allows you to experience things only in terms of their contrast. Which means that you're looking at a dualistic way of viewing reality by definition. Right? I don't understand that I don't fully experience something until I see it contrasted with something else. But in order for me to experience it as it is, rather than as I process it, I don't need the contrast. On the contrary, if I don't have contrast, then I assume that this is the way things are, not the way things need to be experienced by me after processing it. Is this clear?
Mm-hmm.
Right. In other words, if when we say "Ein Or Nikar El Mitoch HaChoshek," we don't mean that you don't experience light. We mean that you confuse light with existence if you never saw darkness. In other words, imagine if the only thing that you ever saw associated with anything was light. So then that's just the way things are. You wouldn't think you could separate between an essence that's called light and the fact of existence. That essence would be existence. Comes along now, Choshech, teach me. No, it's possible to conceive of existence without light. Since that's true, I can now separate out light from the nature of being. Yeah? But that means that I'm a step away from experience, not a step closer to experience. Maimed Har Sinai had something wrong with it. What was the something wrong with it? The fact that since it was perceived as a rape, I didn't view it as my own experience. It's not what I would have wished for myself. It's not the end of there's no kim of a kibul. It's because, like Otto Marishan said, I didn't choose her. And therefore, I don't want her. You gave her to me. What do you mean? But I'm God. If I gave her to you, it's because she was specifically meant for you. I know, but that's the point. I want a woman that I meet and I go out with, and then I choose her. But I mean, if I rape you into Kabbalah's Torah, it's because the Torah is more yours. As Maharal points out, once you rape a woman, you can't divorce her. What does that mean? It means that there's a deeper relationship, not a lesser relationship. So I'm telling, and that's the whole point. I mean, obviously he wasn't raped literally in the sense of, I mean, as the Maharal explains, that was the rape. The fact that it was so clear to us, there's no way out of this. There's no, what are we going to do? Say no. I mean, that's what life is for. On the other hand, I would have preferred for things to have been easier, you know? So that idea is, I would have preferred, is not to accept rape and to view that that's something that comes from outside of you. Right? That's same as the Kviyat Tova of Adam Rishon. It's from outside. It's got to be mine. Whereas in actuality, it's more yours. That means that there was something about Har Sinai which still demanded, instead of the direct experience of the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there was a sense of being an outsider who processes this information and then has to determine whether this is a good thing for him or not a good thing for him. Correct? How does Mordechai deal with that? Fascinatingly, by creating a religion of being there. An idea of being there, you know, that movie, I think they called Dave, what's it called? You know, which they had this idiot, you know, which they
didn't.
Yeah, I think it was. There's an idea of being there in the sense that a person who experiences life as it is and does not have ideas of what he would wish to have in life. So even if it's very primitive, and we romanticize this in terms of the noble savage and the, you know, the farmer who's close to the earth despite the fact that he's cursing it out, you know. But we understand that someone who has accepted the reality of his life doesn't have the needs that a Westerner has of breaking out and doing it my way. That such a person has a deeper appreciation for the simple experience of existence that comes through living that other people have. The fact is that Mordechai's creation created a religion that provided that. Because during the time of Esther of the Shechina, if you go into a Beit HaMikdash, okay, I see Asara Nisim, and I see the presence of God, and I know that I always have that available, and I can bring a carbon, and I can be metakein myself, and so on and so forth. What am I going to do now? And they felt it was all over, basically. Well, we're going to live now through 2,000 years of Prague. I mean, forget about it. I mean, that's not a divorce. That's death. I mean, there's no way we can do that. So he did something fantastically effective. Because what Lamaisa happened is that people in following the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah actually experience some, obviously there's a lot of it that's just emotional and so on, but they actually experience a chibur to a structure that allows them to be in the presence of existence. True, it's very, very limited. So it's like a farmer. When you say he's Korvel Adama, there's some sense of he knows he's alive. The way an animal knows it's alive, perhaps. But that's also a direct experience of being rather than a thinking about what it is about the human condition that I... none of that's there. It's just, I am because I am. And this is a life that's given to me because it is. And that's what we call a Poshita Yid. It's a Poshita Yid. Somebody doesn't know from great, that may not have much Ashkofes and so on and so forth, but he knows through direct perception certain simple realities about Yirat Shamayim, what a mitzvah is, what a Shabbos is, and so on. Like we were talking a few weeks ago, there's some type of correspondence. When we talk about a correspondence, we mean that if I talk about, I saw something which is red, I believe that when you hear those words, you have an image of the color red in your brain. And that if I could somehow tune into your brain, I would see you thinking about red. Now, I have no reason to believe such a thing. Because, I mean, there's no reason for me to think that maybe your concept of red, if I would see it, I would think it's green. Correct? Yet I believe that, you understand, Yaakov, you look doubtful about that. Why in the world should the construct of a color, which, I mean, what's a color? A color is a sensation in a brain that you're identifying with. So why in the world should your sensation of a color, or of anything, your sensation of pain, why would it be similar to my sensation?
That's the shared experience of humanity.
There is no shared experience, by definition. There cannot be a shared experience of a mental event.
Well, my red is your red because we both agree that this wavelength is red.
Yes, but your personal and subjective experience of that wavelength may be entirely different than my experience of that wavelength, as we know in cases where the brain doesn't work. So
the commonality, the common ground that we get.
But that's a chiddush. That's a tremendous chiddush, because what it means is that we believe there's a consonance between what is going on some level of reality and our subjective experience, right? That's a tremendous chiddush. In terms of positivism, there would be no way to assert such a thing.
You can't prove it, but the fact is that...
That's the same. So we believe it's true, and this is true for physics as well. We believe that the fact that I detect a table here, even though I know perfectly well that there is no table here, all that there is basically a slightly different level of attractive forces between adjacent atoms that are 99.999% empty space, but those attractive forces in this particular configuration make me feel that there's a table here. Okay? Now, Lamaisa, I know that if I could see on the level of the microcosm, my capability of differentiating those particular structures of forces from others, I mean, for me to be able to do that would probably take 10 million years for me to define what happened to create a macroscopic object called a table, assuming I could do it at all, correct? Nonetheless, I believe that there must be some consonance between what's going on in the microcosm and between the impact that it has on the macrocosm. That there actually is one world which is nested above another world, but which it makes perfectly good sense, even though it's too complicated for me to understand, but I believe it makes sense. The same thing is true when we talk about mental phenomena. Is the same thing true in terms of spiritual phenomena? Or more, in terms of the experience of existence? So here we understand that the one thing that we're going to respond to in the same way is the fact that our knowledge of existence is consonant with a reality, an external reality, called existence. He was koveya that in terms of what appears to be a religion. Now, the shaila is why that itself is not tremendously destructive because it gives an opening to the subjectivity of Avodas Kehavim. What allows it to be maintained as an experience of Har Sinai, as opposed to a religious experience? And for this, it was clear that the only thing that allows that is the fact that at the same time that the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah started that, they also started the Chibur to Torah Sheba'al Peh. The Chibur of Torah Sheba'al Peh demanded a tremendous amount of creativity, which meant a response to input, peer review, and the substitution of Eimel HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ba'olamo Ela Arba Amot Shel Halacha for the Mokam HaMikdash. Let's see how profound that is. The Eimel HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ba'olamo Ela Arba Amot Shel Halacha obviously doesn't mean that the only time a person is Mishabet HaKadosh Baruch Hu is when he's either being Eisik in Halacha or doing something up the Halacha. The point is that in the same way that a Mikdash allows there to be a Mokam for the Shekhinah, what defines makom? That it's not just an expression of your own mind and your own responses to a beautiful building, which in fact was only at the very end of the tkuf of the Beit HaMikdash. We say, ah, oh, that's a beautiful building. Kol Misher Lo Yirah. That's where it is. That's the lowest level that the Beit HaMikdash ever reached, was that it was the most beautiful building in the world. You understand? So on the contrary, that's the least important aspect of it to us. So in the same way that we understand that the particular geometrical constraints, and the as the Navi says, as the Malach says to Yecheskel, go show them over the Tochnit of the Bayit, that'll do it. They'll be Mevayish from their Chatoyim. You know, he appears with a ruler in his ear. I mean, it's some Malach, the engineer Malach, you know. That's tremendously powerful. Why? Because it means that what it is that we experience isn't just a human aesthetical response, but rather there is some consonance with an underlying reality, because these are the tzivuim of how HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave these tzivuim. We compared it to cosmos. You know, remember that Carl Sagan movie? I think it was called, was it called Cosmos? Was it called Contact? Contact, I think it was called. In which people are given instructions, they discover in a radio telescope a message, they follow these instructions and they build something and have no idea what it's supposed to do. And Lamaisa, it ends up working. Right? So as it transcends the limitations of three-dimensional space, they're able to contact a whole different level, but they have no idea why it works. They just follow the instructions. Okay, but they understand that it's consonant with some type of scientific vision that we simply don't have yet an understanding of. Yeah? One thing? I think latest. I mean, I have to call and find out if I can come later here. Okay, please, because thanks, bye. So, therefore, the Eimel HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ba'olamo Ela Arba Amot Shel Halacha is connected that same nekuda. If there's no Arba Amot Shel Halacha, then there is no space which is consonant with an external reality. There's only the experiences of people's interpretation of spirituality, which leaves us completely in the hands of Avodas Kehavim. The value of Arba Amot Shel Halacha means that there's a place for HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the Olam. Why? Because halakha is responsive to a matrix of reality that is consonant with my arsenal. So since everyone will fight me and try to prove me wrong if I say upshot, and since there's a riot to be brought from here and a riot to be brought from there, and new information that's coming to light, it's similar to the only other aspect of human endeavor that was ever successful. And that's science itself, which is really a subdivision of Torah. Why is science successful? Because it's consonant with an external reality. Every other system of thought simply collapsed when the cultural basis of that system of thought collapsed with it. But science doesn't collapse because of the fact that it insists in its essence in being now something that accepts criticism, in which everybody is going to go out to provide an alternative explanation, in which there's ways of ascertaining which one is more correct, and so on and so forth. So in Eilu, you can't just walk in and say whatever you like. It doesn't allow room for Boich Svaras, and exactly the same way that the Torah doesn't allow room for Boich Svaras. So the more you're committed to that process, Milchamta Shel Torah, that Milchamta Shel Torah is the equivalent of peer review in science. Nobody will let you get away with anything. You'll say something, they're anxious to prove you wrong. And that's the Yisbuchu B'chavi Raya. I know that they're happy when I'm wrong. That's part of the Milchama. And that's part of the tefillah of going into the Beit HaMedrash. I want to win, and you want to win. And you're happy when I lose and you win. That gives me not a chance of putting something over your eyes, because you're not interested in hearing something put over your eyes. You're interested in proving me wrong. Right? And that was always the derech of learning Torah. You know this guy Albright, the famous historian from, one of the early, he's no longer alive. He was one of the early people that would, that was involved in the creating of standards for yeshiva, was supposed to be. In the arts system, which was one of the federally recognized, federally recognized, like the Atlantic, board that provides accreditation for various schools and has standards for such accreditation.
Benchmark
curriculum. No, I forgot the word. But anyway, it's a federally established idea that every member that is accredited will accredit any other member that the organization as a whole accredits. Okay, so this guy Albright, anyway, came, at that time, he came to Neri Yisrael, because they were one of the first ones that were involved. He came to Neri Yisrael as part of a review committee to see the Derech Alimut of Yeshivas. And he was brought into a classroom. And he came out of the classroom, and he was mamish shaken. He said, this is what we dream of, that people should contradict the teacher, should try to prove that he's wrong, to bring proofs that he's wrong. Wow, this is our dream in university. But instead, everybody sits there like a bunch of lambs and listens to what the lecturer says and afraid to even ask questions. That's the way it once was. but the idea of milchama, again, creates a consonance. If there's a makom in the Eilam that has some kind of external reality, then there's a makom for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The place of Avodah Zarah is that there's no external consonance whatsoever. There's nothing you can ask. Yeah, I'm getting there. There's nothing you can ask. And therefore, because there's always some new thing that you can postulate. So what Mordechai does, therefore, is bring these two things together. On the one hand, there's the experience, but on the other hand, you have a makom. And that makom was the Teresh Baal Peh. Lamaisa, the two things are fundamentally interrelated. Why? Because the kimu, the kiblu, was to be metakein the kofalei marachagigas, which Tosfos says, why do we need kofalei marachagigas, since we had already said na'aseh v'nishma? So Tosfos explains, we need kofalei marachagigas because, as the Medrash Tanchumah says, we were willing to accept the Torah, but not the Teresh Baal Peh, and that's hell on earth. We thought we were going to get some answers from God. Now we get up there, we see we got more questions than we have answers. When do we need more questions? So Mamela, we wanted to get out of that. Comes along now for him. This is directly, the idea of Hester being itself an experience of presence, right? So that concept that Hester is an experience of presence, which is fundamentally, the Kimo the Kiblu was two things at once. It was the acceptance of rape, meaning that I find in life as it is, rather than how I wish that it could have been. I find it, the reality of my experience of existence itself. At the same time, that's the tikkun that is makabo, the willingness to be tereach with Teresh Baal Peh. Just as Har Sinai was meant to be, kol ha'am ro'in es ha'kerleis, and then to spend the rest of your life understanding what it is that you saw. But the experience is a realistic experience that you understand was directly because of the presence of the Shekhinah on Har Sinai. So when we're coming now to Shemini, what it is that Mordechai was doing was preserving two completely different elements of reality. One is Amalek. Because academia retains their entire Amalek focus. What's the Amalek focus? Postmodernism, essentially. That's Kerry. Any explanation that you give, I'll give you a different explanation. Since we don't have any place to examine those explanations, because they're all constructs with the different brains, there's no possible way to say that one is better than any other. They, of course, attempt to say the same thing about science itself. The success of science proves them different. The reality is that this is the only successful endeavor in which it's based on the concept of Zikaron, in which each piece builds on each previous piece. Nothing else in the world is successfully built on Zikaron. That's the Zichor Asher Asa Lecha Amalek. So Mamela, the area that retains the potentialities and so on, he allows this to continue to be true, Mordechai. Where? In Teresh Bopeh. In Teresh Bopeh, we always allow for other possibilities. And the moment that those other possibilities become possible, then those become the possibilities that we have to taste. I'm going to break, take a bathroom break for one moment. A few people will be my homie. So that. Okay.
Maybe you skipped olive oil.
Okay, it's true. I had mentioned earlier the relationship of Tirosh v'Yitzhar, that there's two things in the world that are incorporative of the elements that go into them. One of them is wine. The other is oil, but in a completely different way. Oil is simply the way in which we identify the storage of energy in the Bria, right? So in other words, we have our vision of providing light is oil-oriented. So that the Tirosh v'Yitzhar are two very special things. So Gemara said, L'maisa, we should have a special bracha for, even for oil, except that it's mazik in eating. But in terms of halacha, we still distinguish them from everything else, because all other mashke is considered to be zeya b'yama. You can't use it for bikurim and so on. But when it comes to wine and oil, they're considered to be the etzem, if not the higher level, of the that which grew. And we compared this to the two issues that need to be supported. One of them is the overall potential, and that's kineged the aragonos. That's why we use oil for Hanukkah. That's why we use wine for Purim. Because the idea of the expression of stored energy is a universal, which allows for the continued presence of everything that the world may have in it. But it's universal in that it incorporates everything. Generally, wine is very, very specific, and therefore it's a Purim issue, because Purim, the whole point was the specificity. It's you, Esther. It's the individual, whatever it is that they're doing. And the uniqueness of that, by the way, is even understood by Ahasuerus, because he gives everybody in the Suda wine that's older than he is, to indicate that the history of that wine is Nogea, the preparation of a world in which you come. That's the only explanation. Well, it's a chashivas of wine that's older than you are. But as the world was here preparing for your presence. Now that you're here, here's your wine, which is Kenega, the yayin that's Meshumar Ba Misheshimei Bereshis. The only difference is that yayin that is Meshumar Ba Misheshimei Bereshis includes within it the entirety of Bria's history, so it becomes the equivalent of the Yitzhar at the end of the story. So that's the relationship between the two. And once you're Zocha to that wine in Elam Haba, it means that the Or HaGonuz now is not simply universal, but that it includes within it all elements of the history, as if it's a fine wine, which is all different. I mean, basically, it's what it's all about. Gan Eden essentially is the entirety of it, so that Adam Rishon has the potentiality of all of humanity.
Maybe
it's from the Yitzhar, I'm following that. Yeah, that's Shnei B'nei Yitzhar, which becomes now our Torah Shebal Peh, right, in the vision of the menorah. Shnei v'nei Yitzhar, as the Talmid Chachamim in Bavel and Eretz Yisrael, that becomes now the preservation of all the potentialities. You have one way of learning Torah. How about if I tear you to pieces and show you every stupid halacha that you passed is wrong from the beginning? I mean, that's the type of machlokes that you have in the Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. You're wrong about everything, because all your basic assumptions are wrong. So we understand that there are indeed many different approaches. You have different communities that have what appear to be different Torahs. The reason that they're not different Torahs is because they're taking different elements of a consistent vision, which is a Shiva Panim LaTorah, and that's acceptable. You're going to go tiny against them because they do it that way. They don't have Al Mila Smoth. They don't have a way to work it out. It's obvious. I mean, that whole idea of the preservation of the potentiality is what has saved us from becoming mad. Because what should have happened in terms of religion is that we would have had one particular way in which everything would have worked out, and then everything spiraling downwards. Everybody would then have to dress the same, think the same, feel the same things, and so on and so forth, right? What protected us against that until very recently? What protected us against it was the fact that Torah Sheba'al Peh insisted on maintaining all the other possibilities. And therefore, on Purim, you literally feel it. You make fun of everything. Right? You take the Rosh Yeshiva, you make him into an idiot. And it's important to do that, and the Gemara does this all. Why does the Gemara express to us the awful curses that everybody gives to each other, the way they laugh at each other? Why do we need to be privy to that? Because that's part of the preservation of Torah Sheba'al Peh. If not, we're going to take seriously every word that came out of Rabbi Akiva's mouth. We don't need to hear Akiva, Malachi, what do you know about these things, please? Because we need to understand that on the level that they were dealing with, is that one reality that's Rabbi Akiva? Right? It's interesting, Shamshon Raphael Hirsch, one of his big personal complaints in life is the Rambam. He can't stand the Rambam. Because everybody takes the Rambam too seriously. You know, so when he's writing about the way in which in the end maybe we'll have one person left who knows what it is to be a Jew, so he can't resist putting in there, there's the one person who's left who knows the difference between Moshe Rabbeinu and Moshe Ben Maimon. That's the same idea. Okay, yeah, fine, we'll talk about that breakdown. That's a breakdown. But the Pella is that in practical terms, this mamish works. Because if you consider those who were in fact committed and maintained the commitment to the Derech of Torah in terms of that technical prores and commitment to becoming fighters in Milchamta Shel Torah, the one thing that they puncture all the time is religion. You can't imagine a Brisker being religious. A true Brisker. Because he has no patience for your particular gut feelings about a thing, right? The whole idea is to puncture gut feelings and to try to define, so what's the shot? Give me the consistent thing that I can argue with and that anybody else, don't tell me how you feel about it. So what's an idea? We're learning the halakha over here. To the point where, I mean, it goes into crazy things, you know, like the Rav Soloveitchik's thing about, you know, what are you crying for Tkia Shafer? Would you cry for Kenisa the Kedushin? Both mitzvahs. Why? You know, that halakhic man is the madness of that approach, the ultimate. But the idea is certainly clear. The response of the Groh to the beginning of Hasidism was exactly what it was that Mordechai had set into place. If ever somebody comes along and starts a cult, the way to kill the cult is by assertion that Ein Elokei HaKadosh Baruch Hu Elohim Ha'arav Ha'Amim Shel Halacha. That's exactly what the Groh did. Committed his entire life to creating the realness of those boundaries. That you can't go out of that. So that was, and I don't even know, maybe he perceived this himself, and I never saw it in his writings, but that was connected to Vayechazu HaZalim Ve'yachlu V'yishto. You can't go beyond and start having experiences of spirituality without that leading directly to Avodah Zarah, just as it did on the Har Sinai, which became the Egel. Those were the elements of the Egel. There's no three different pagamim in Kabbalah Satara. It's all one pagam. The Vayachlu V'yishto, the lack of tznius that leads to the Egel is exactly the same thing as the Vayachlu V'yishto. The unwillingness to say to the Mi'itein, Atati Tein, Exactly the same thing. I don't want you to be detained. I want it to be done my way. Same idea. The kimu v'kiblu, the unwillingness to take on Torah Shabbat. Same idea. So it's not that Mordecai was a genius, that he was able to perceive we need to do two things simultaneously. They are intimately interrelated historically and factually. If I'm mekabel on myself, that kimu v'kiblu, that rape is a deeper reality than doing it my way. And that the end result anyway of any experience in life either was an experience of the underlying reality or it was self-generated. And if it's self-generated, in the end, it's worthless. Or we brought an example. People go to a wedding. Right? You're telling me that they actually enjoy this insanity that goes on at weddings? Does somebody enjoy it? Sure they do. They're dancing around and they're making a big tumult and so on. They enjoy it because they're creating it. So if you do it, you enjoy it. But how about enjoying the wedding? How about enjoying the simcha per se? Is there a, for anybody else, there's no simcha and a rabba. For anybody else, it creates sadness. Why? Because they recognize that these people have no idea what the heck they're talking about. They think that the wedding consists of the fact that they're excited at their first night together, or they think they're going to have fun as a married couple. What do they know? What's going to happen when the money problems come in, and the children come in, and this sorrow comes in? What are they crazy? So what are we sensing? We're sensing vayiba yom hashmini. Anyone intelligent, when he walks into a wedding, senses right away, nebuch, these people sitting on the deck of the Titanic, dancing around as if everything is this moment, and in their own creation of the simcha, that's a simcha? Mela, you hear a brocha, kisamecha yitzircha b'gan eden mikedem. There's an experience of the fullness of life, so that those tzoras that are meant to follow and are part of what it means to be married and part of what it means to take responsibility for life, that's the simcha. But it's not a simcha that's been created because of the fact that I'm dancing around. Right? The dancing around is part of taking the mind of the chasam and kala off of the pain of the moment. That's the halacha. You have to be misameach chasam and kala. Why? Because innately they're miserable. No, this is really true. You're not sharing their simcha, you're trying to make them be sameach.
Why is that like harsina?
I'll explain in a moment. I just want to tell over a murder that I had this week. Remember, I told you I went to this, I rarely go to weddings because of this, because they make me momish sick. But I went to a wedding of a cousin that is, I'm very, very close to, one of the only cousins I'm close to. And he's the grandson of the Rosh Yeshiva of Hebron, Rav Moshe Mordechai. Rav Shimshon Epstein's granddaughter.
Oh,
this is six generations already from it, right? So, and it's one of these religious weddings with the dancing going on and the mishugana banging so loud that you shouldn't be able to tell that he doesn't know how to play any music. You know, the whole thing. And I'm momish. This is insane. So I go outside because I just can't take any. First of all, the pain, the physical pain. I mean, the eardrums, and I keep forgetting to take along the earplugs. I go, you know, if you have earplugs, not so bad. But I left the earplugs at home. So I went outside. You know, okay. Anyway, I'm sitting there outside. Who do I meet? My cousin, the grandfather of the bride. There he is outside. So we dance together. The two of us dance outside while everybody else is going insane inside. You know. And he starts crying, and he tells me, no, my father wasn't zocha to see a grandchild married. My grandfather wasn't zocha to see a grandchild married. That I should be zocha to such a thing, such chaste hamoka, and such a hamoka. He was crying from, you know, the real simcha that's involved, the understanding of the flow of life and the meaning of the moment, you know. Then he tells me, he says, you know, I'll tell you. I said, you know, I thought I was crazy coming out here. I'm so happy I met you out here. So he tells me a story of his father, who was at the wedding of Rav David Finkel from Mir. So he had brought him as a kid to the wedding, as a teenager to the wedding. So, okay, so all the Rabbanim, the Kala was from the one of the big Rabbanim in Tel Aviv. So all the Gedalei Rabbanim were sitting up there on the, you know, the Mizrachvan, so to speak, of the Chasana Hall. And they leave, the wedding's in Tel Aviv, they're walking down Dizengoff. So his father says to him, you know, Shimshon, if you could find maybe a pub or a little store that's open, We could go in together and get a beer. He's like, his father never doesn't. Why do you want to do that? He says, I'm so happy Dovidov got married. I'd like to celebrate. He says, what do you mean? You were just at the wedding. He says, that's a chasna. I want to have simcha. At that point, one of his grandchildren comes out and says, everybody's looking for you. Why aren't you inside? Grimaces to me. That's mamish, this kind of thing. So this is Parshat what Vayhi Bayom HaShmini is all about. It doesn't say that there's no simcha. It says, Ein simcha mampenet lo la'adam. Ritzoncha vayda. Asimcha lo himtina la'kadosh baruch. Of course not. It's not meant to be mamtina. Because the idea over here is the experience as it is. Generally, we think that there's two alternatives. Either you're locked into Olam Hazeh, in which case you're hopelessly lost because you're going to be wiped out by definition. There's no way out of this alive. Or you're actually able to be on a darga in which your machshava is dvuka lemala, in which your experience of Olam Hazeh is indeed part of a vision of what it is to derive from Olam Hazeh, but that's in your mind is somewhere else. That vision is what destroyed Har Sinai. Because the thought that Olam Hazeh wipes you out, or the thought that it's possible to be miyached your life in the area of your own differentiation between being and non-being, that's the closest we can get to Olam Haba, is because of Ayin Lo Ra'ata. The only thing that we have is the clarity of being and non-being. To view those two things as different is what destroyed Har Sinai. Instead, what needs to happen, and this is Nogea, how it is that wine serves both elements. What needs to happen is that the person has to understand that his experience of existence is tied to the ongoing flow of life, not to his consciousness of existence that comes from the Abdullah between the moment to come and the moment that just disappeared. The flow of life is the equivalent of what it is that he was beside. It's a rape. Of course it's a rape. The more it's a rape, the more it's an actual experience. The more it's something that you attempt to self-generate. Do you have a vision of what I would like life to be? We spoke about Million Dollar Baby. Is that idea. Somebody has an idea you have. My life is to achieve kach v'kach. And if I can't do that, there's no point in my living. The tremendous chisaron is out of my life. Tremendous chisaron. That's what happens in Million Dollar Baby. Because the fact is that the real life that's yours is the life that you have, not the life that you would like to have. It's not the life of the preserved possibilities.
We start John Lennon's
talking about this last night, yeah. And it's always like that. So if you relate to that, to the experience of that life, then it's the flow of the experience as opposed to the loss of the experience, which is what Abdullah is about. Normally, the bane, that type of experience is always loss. And the melech scares you away from Olam Hazeh. Mashenkein, if the experience is the direct, noble, savage kind of experience, without its romance, but the fact of this being the only time and the only area in which I can ever achieve some vague notion of existence, but it's all that I have. And out of that, to generate those emergent elements that we call a higher level of consciousness and an ability to attain Olam Haba, those two things are fundamentally interrelated. But by definition, in experiencing the flow, I recognize the vai.
The what?
The vai of the vaihi. Therefore, the Gemara says, vai is either Lashon Simcha or Lashon Tsar. Almost as Vai a Lashon of Simcha. Saying Vai is a Lashon of Simcha because if it's a Simcha She'en Kamo, and if it's a Tsar, it's a Tsar She'en Kamo. I said that the two are completely interrelated. Because if somebody's trying to hold on so that he believes he could be Mamtin, I mean, of course it can't be Mamtin for you. How could it be Mamtin? The whole nature of reality is that it's not Mamtin. Elamai, you want to be able to get that which comes of it. And here we spoke at a kudah that Eli was, when I went on there, I went for a day with Eli. He was magdir it so well. The pshat is like this. What distinguishes a person who is searching for spirituality? And so it becomes very weird. Towards Avedis Kekovim, from someone who is willing to buy into the system. The difference is very poshut. If you're interested in the experience, as opposed to that which allowed the experience to emerge, you become crazy. Because that's bad, so I'm looking for a fix. So your relationship to the world is constantly in terms of fixes. So if you ever had anything that triggered for you an experience that you liked, you continuously look to re-trigger it. Ah! So it worked when I took LSD. So I'll take LSD again. So it worked when I was singing the Nigunim. So I'll sing the Nigunim or whatever it is. I'm not interested in buying into a system that allows for there to be emergent properties that are meaningful to me. It's like a person who believes that happiness is the tapas of life. So he works on happiness. Those are the most miserable people. Because the only point that happiness is an outgrowth of living a life that from it can emerge a sense of fulfillment which provides happiness. It's exactly the same thing over here. You can't create the Simcha V'Chasna. You can't create Vayi Vayom HaShmini from saying, wow, this minute is just, this is incredible. We finally reached the top. That isn't the point.
It has to be something real that creates a state.
Okay, that's good. That's, yeah, Simcha Shomitz is fundamental to the idea. And that itself is expressed in the two elements of Yayin. Yayin, the experience of Yayin as a connoisseur, is not the experience of the Havdalah between non-Yayin and Yayin. It's not the experience of inebriation, the difference in consciousness, like a high that you get from a drug. There's no joy in the physical experience of the drug except in the state that the drug creates. People take wine for the same reason, for the state that it creates. And they don't care whether it's wine or if it's perfume. The icker is that it should be alcohol. It should be able to give them what it is that they're looking for. But the vision of Das in terms of wine, in terms of connoisseur, is that the experience of the wine itself is the experience of everything that went into the vine. And that's why it's so important. That's why the specificity is worth everything to me. Whereas if I'm looking for the totsah, then I have no specificity. It's the loss into the wine that's important. There's a mamish opposites. There's nothing that brings out those two elements more clearly. Wine serves both as the vayi in the story of Noah, and serves as the tirosh, zochanasarosh, lo zochanasarosh, inokinami. What's the zechiyah? That's the question. If I can experience the wine itself, then the havdolah that I experience is not the havdolah between one state and another. It's the havdolah of what goes into the wine. We compared it to the idea of chok tochos and osios on Purim. If you're reading stam, it doesn't matter what you're reading. Because if you're looking at a screen, you're actually reading the background, not the foreground, because the foreground is only the shadow, right? Normally. The black letters are the areas that the computer is not lighting. So, but you see those areas because of the contrast of the white areas. So the white areas the computer is working on, so to speak, sending a signal to those areas, lighting it up, so that you should be able to read the screen. Lamaisa, that's possible in the Ksiva of the Sefer Torah. Because you need to have the dio as opposed to the background. And if you have chok tochos, you scrape off dio to create a letter, it's not a kosher letter. Because then it exists as a contrast rather than as the experience of the ketiva per se, right? So the same thing is true. Be'etzem in HaKadosh Baruch Hu Sefer Torah says, alo kod varai ke'esh nu'um Hashem. What's that esh? That's the esh that the Malachi mentioned. That the Torah shaita ktuva lefanecha be'esh shachor agave esh lavan. So the chat esh lavan. It means that the background is also called Vargesh, right? Because there's no such thing as just the background. So in the experience of Torah, as it's meant to be experienced according to the Malachim, you can read the background. You have to read the background. You have to read the foreground. Which, by the way, we mentioned in the Purim Shir, is why Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra says that Divrei Torah Mekabelim Tumah. There's no din of carry. because the part that isn't used is just as important as the part that is used. The part that isn't used being the gilayon, but that's also ke'esh. The menela did right there is on the kabel too. It's unbelievable. That's his marker. The Gemara says, but in any event, here it's the same thing. The experience of the wine in terms of what it is a nature of havdalah that takes the difference between Shabbos and Chol, not because it's different, but rather because it's Shabbos. Because it's Chol, I know the difference between Shabbos and Chol. Shabbos is Shabbos and Chol is Chol, not because now is the time between Shabbos and Chol, right? So it's not the concentration on the area that gives me the contrast. That's Be'etzim, the ultimate schar of Yayin, and that's what they were attempting to achieve. It's not that the Yayin should simply serve as the difference, that it should serve as the experience, but rather that it serves as the Das itself that's capable of creating the Chibur. They couldn't do that. Why couldn't you do that? Because they hadn't accepted being raped. The right that they hadn't accepted being raped is that they were the ones who peaked, but they shouldn't have peaked. If this is what I wanted to give you as a wife, this is what I'm going to do. I would have given you. If I tell you that this is your mechitza, you can't stay in your mechitza, right? You know how fundamental it is that you can't stay in your mechitza? That's all that needed to be done to destroy Shimi ben Gera. That was Shlomo's genius. All I need to do is that, listen, you don't want to get killed, stay in Yerushalayim, you'll be fine. And then I say to Ben Yobinian, okay, follow him, I'll tell you, he's going to leave tonight, you know. Sure enough, there's always a reason to leave. Why? Is I'm not going to stay in a mechitza that somebody else gives me. That's merida. And ultimately, a person who needs to do it his way will not be makabel kima v'kibul. Memela is not going to be makabel the mechitza samishka, and therefore, in drinking wine, is searching for an experience, ultimately. A self-generated experience, which isn't consonant with an external reality, and therefore is not the yayin that was Meshumar above, despite the fact that they had brought along the same yichur that was from Gan Eden that Adam had had, and that Noach had had, and so on. That was good for the place in which it became evil for them. Everybody thought that they could handle that. The experience, of course, that's all that I want, is the thing, not the part that is self-generated. But in order to do that, you need to have a matzav of absolute acceptance of kibbutz v'kibbutz. So in Mela, you need these two things together, otherwise you're always, on some level, a seeker of experience. Ad hayom, you find that the self-correction that was put into place by kibbutz v'kibbutz is fundamentally active. Because even though you have a yerida into religion, which has come even in places, and by the way, this is because the yeshiva world has merged with the Hasidic world. There's no longer any difference between them. Right? Until very recently, it was two completely different worlds. Mode of dress, the mode of thinking and taking seriously a Rebbe or not taking seriously. They were things people would kill for. People, until very recently, would seek Shiva if a Litvish family, literally, would marry into a Hasidish family. Literally seek Shiva. I'm not saying that. Literally seek Shiva. And you're talking only two, three generations ago that was common. So up until that point, this element provided protection against religion. They had no stomach for it, no interest. It actually worked, the Milchamta Shoterim. What happened was, is that the substitution of religion became the Dafka substitution for Torah. So people thought, I remember, this is 40 years ago now, I remember when my father Zatzal came to Eretz Yisrael, it was the first time he'd been here in many, many years, like 30, 40 years. And so, you know, and there wasn't like a lot of communication between Eretz Yisrael and Chutz Loretz. So, first, he met with my cousin, who's a big brisker, you know, Zelig, you know, Zelig. So, I remember they were sitting around talking, he was asking, how's the matzav of learning in Eretz Yisrael? So, Zelig tells him, there's been a tremendous yerida the past few years. So, my father asks him, what do you attribute it to? He says, frumkeit. This is already 40 years, but that was just the beginning of this whole change in Judaism. So, the Pashtas, I think that what they were talking about was a substitution of standards. That's the way most people viewed it. In other words, as long as people felt that Aliyah B'Torah was the thing that was the measure of a man, so then that became the thing that people put themselves into. If you substitute piety for that, then people don't care about it. But it's much deeper than that. It's much deeper because be'etzem the two are antithetical. You find a lamdan, he's never religious. He's not from, if he's a real lamdan. He's more interested in, you think it's only because he's more interested in. You find somebody who's very from, he's not a lamdan. Basically, Mesillas Yesharim points to the same phenomena early, that you see somebody who's acting as a chosid, you know, you can't help but be chesha, but he's a little bit, something's a little bit wrong with his brain, you know. He's stupid, or he writes in the introduction of the Mesillas Yesharim. But it's much more than a question of substitution of values. What happens is that the drive for frumkeit is the drive for religion, but the drive for religion is the drive for self-generation. It's for opiate. And it's Marxism, the kudah of the opiate of the masses, is very on target. It's the search for a fix. The search for a fix cannot really tolerate an external reality that I'm ready to fight for. Instead, the focus of someone who's from, in terms of Torah, is to learn all of the shittas of halacha and to be machmer, right? That's what you do. There was the Mishnah Berurah. You become a big bucky in Mishnah Berurah, and in all of the various shittas of halacha and how you get there. But to fight, you'll never find someone like that arguing with the Mishnah Berurah. He's not gonna fight against the way the halacha ended up and saying, no, it's wrong from the sugya, and this was the first mistake, so, which is the exact opposite of what you find in the lamdan, not a rabbi. The lamdan's gonna say, okay, you know, maybe we'll call the Mishnah Berurah halacha, but he certainly doesn't know what he's talking about. I mean, he's wrong with this and so on and so forth. So he's mechalik between the halacha as it's kavua, because this is the basic. It's like this famous story of Reb Chaim the Achiezer. You know, when he was stuck in Japan during the war, so he writes the Achiezer, how many days do I have to keep Yom Kippur in Japan? But give me a psak and don't tell me your reason. As he knew, if you had the reason, he would laugh at the psak. He would never follow it. Just tell me the halacha. I don't want to know your reasoning. Okay. I mean, that's basically the classic approach of a lamdan. Nail it, halacha, okay. But I mean, I certainly can't take seriously the ridiculous logic that created that halacha. That's wrong in a million different ways. So, Mamela, the two aspects of yayin are very strongly connected. The two, I mean, one being the havdola of the experience, the other one being the connoisseur of the actual history and taste of the wine itself are very interrelated with the question of kima v'kibla. If the relationship that a person has to life is the taste of the life itself, so he becomes a primitive to some extent. He lives the life as it is and recognizes that from there he has the deepest experience of existence, because it's his only mocker of existence. Out of that can come the emergent experiences that he identifies with the chibur to the Shechina, with the havana of amokim and olam haba, or as the Gemara says, a person should always see within himself if he's a ben olam haba, that he can see. But where is it coming from? So it has to come from things that are consonant with external reality. An external reality that has itself no consonance, because it's been constantly self-generated in terms of, so how do I see my life? It's always thinking about his life, always investing in his life, always thinking about how to get it to go the way that he wants. That's what the Gemara is pointing out over here. So she's happy. You think that that's going to wait around, that she should be happy all the time? How long are you going to be happy? A happiness that's dependent on a particular structure of the way things are, socially or financially, that's called happiness? That's called horror. That's called dependency. That's called neged. That's what it's called. That's not called happiness. Because ein simcha mamtenes lo li'ada. Let's see whether there's anything that I leave out. Anything? The direct perception, the David. What? Okay, yeah. That was the Vayidom Aron over here. Vayidom Aron meant a deep internal experience of the reality. It wasn't a pshat that he didn't complain about the debts of his children. Obviously, he didn't complain to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Vayidah Maron is that there's an internal dmama. Like this is a maskabe, sayidon. There's areas in which you recognize that the only thing that you have is the life that's given. There's nothing to argue about. There's nothing to discuss. This is my life. And that level of demama is basically the ultimate acceptance of Kima V'Kibla, which leads the day of Vayiva Yom HaShmini into becoming Yom HaKippur. And that's a Kedaihu, this Misa of Nodav Avihu, to be Mechaper Al Yisrael Dere Deretz. Result of which is, surprisingly, the very Nodav Avihu, who were dissatisfied with the flow of life, and who wanted always something else. It's got to be done my way. I'll be Mera Halacha B'Shnei Rabbi. I'll bring the Eish Shalot Siva.
I'll settle for what?
Exactly, the whole thing. There's nothing that's good enough. Eimata Yamutu Shnei Azakenim Alalu V'Anachnu Nanhigas Yisrael. We'll show them what's right. That's not the issue. These are not your businesses. Experience life as it is. Whatever will come of it, will come of it. They ended up, surprisingly, because of this moment, their nitzchias came in that instant. It's amazing. That means you can re-experience, and we do, as part of the experience of Yom HaShmini, the only shaykhus that we have still to the Yesod HaMishkan, which becomes Yom HaKippurim, which is the Tikkun of the Shvir Saluchas, and so on, is in the Achrei Moshe Shnei Bnei Aharon. There's somebody who cries on the death of Shnei Bnei Aharon, it's as if he was Makriv V'Shnei HaSeirim. This becomes to us a paradigm of what it is to recognize that only the good die young. That idea that the dreams and the innocence are in a sense a violation of reality, and that it therefore, in order for a person to experience truth and to be able to truly exist, he has to be aimed on Yomash, and this becomes now Mamish Der Nitzchias. This is not of Aviyatas. It's this moment. All the other elements that they were greater than Mesh and Aaron and so on, we don't relate to that. The truth is, we pointed out that in terms... time to run out of an hour here.
So,
we pointed out... what is it about to say?
David.
Oh, all right, David is a good place to... What was I talking about a minute ago?
This is another legal mission.
I should have started saying it without the thing. Okay. Well, we find the same thing in the terms of David's commitments to the world and the death of Yeled. Right? So there he was like so completely involved in that moment and the fasting and the dangers to Yeled's life and so on. People thought he was like ridiculously overly invested, complete romantic, and that if he found out that the kid died, he'd probably commit suicide. Lemaith, the moment that he finds out that the child died, he gets up and stops caring about it. He says, what's the point now? I mean, he's dead. I mean, well, I'm going to do something about it. So let's just get on with life. In other words, there's the clarity that the moment speaks entirely of itself. It's a moment in which you're facing death, so make the most of that moment. It's no longer Nogea, so now that's not the moment that you're living in. Right? So in other words, the deeper experience is the experience of David. God, I can't remember what.
This is basically dreams and the violation of reality.
Darn it, I don't remember. But we did speak about Esther, how Esther almost lost her own ability to be metaken anything when she called him a caliph.
So, did she have to love him? She
had to love her life. And part of loving her life was loving him. It doesn't matter whether this is the guy I want to marry. The fact is that the lo yuchal shalcha in this case, because of the relationship to Yisrael and so on and so forth, defines everything that she had. This was her life. This was Esther's nitzrius. This is what we celebrate. This is unbelievable. I've never heard of celebrating a tragedy, celebrating a rape. It's crazy. We have little kids going around trying to be Esther Amalka, going into Akashir to get raped. I mean, I understand what the real story is, but that it's a little bit crazy for parents to be encouraging this kind of behavior. What happens when they find out? You know?
Is the Kasher vanity of vanity wrong?
No. Kashrut Avadati is the acceptance. And I understand that my parents are dead, and I understand that this is over, and I understand that it was the fact that I was a Yatoma that enabled me to be what I am, to be totally accepting of you and our relationship. The relationship that she had with Mordechai was a rape. She was a little kid. He took her as a wife. It was child abuse. That's why she never wanted anybody to know about that relationship, right? Mordechai Tzivala Shalotagit. That's why she's not saying. But that was her whole life. That's why it stresses Rubamota Viyavima. There wasn't an instant that she had anyone to rely on.
Are we saying Kasher Avadati in the past, Avadati in the future?
That's what the Gemara says. Kasher Avadati Rabba Viyima Avad Mimech. Mimcha.
If I go, I go. If I lose, I lose.
That's also true, but there's a different point. The life that I had with you, I have to give up. See, this is very similar to what they do in Million Dollar Baby, is they set you up to believe, and that, of course, the person is going to be Ms. Gaber now, whose entire tachlis in life was to become a boxer, this woman. So now that she's a quadriplegic, so of course she'll do something else. You know, it sets you up, you know, what's she going to do? She's going to go to college. She's going to open up a restaurant. You know, it turns out she commits suicide. That's the great gedula. Why? Because she was already saying she had to the best. How could she go down now? Mamish, exact opposite of the whole nekuda of Purim. It's my way or no way. All the modern mirror image of the idea of what it is that Esther achieves.
My way or the highway.
I don't know what that is.
It's the matrix. Say it again.
Okay, what else did we have?
Rest.
Yes. So we said that even those who today have created an alternative religion are very cynical about that religion. Those who continue to learn Torah remain very, very cynical about it. So they will laugh, not only on Purim, but basically they laugh at all the silly covet issues and the, you know, the shita issues and the cell phone issues and the nonsense. I mean, they can't admit publicly that they don't take it seriously, because after all, these are Gedolei Torah. But deep down, they know something is wrong. And the reason that they know that is from the other element of the tircha, in the maintaining the elements of Amalek that are maintained in the potentialities of Tersh Baal Peh. And they know that there's a different world somewhere that is more real. There was one that could also be pointed out that I thought was very important, which is the reason for the breakdown of this paradigm. What's the reason for the breakdown? Because it's not coincidental that it just so happened that people got so weak that they gave up and they're willing to tell. It's much more than that. The point is this. Part of the tikkun of Mordechai is that this thing is self-limiting. Because clearly, the aspects of Yahadut within the structure of Yisrael need to be self-limiting. Because they can only function at a time in which there's no room for real creativity. Since you can't be chaylik on the das of the bezdin, ultimately. In other words, Enoch Inami, he was kovei a time of tremendous creativity. That's why you find the beginning of Pirkei Avot is at that point, where each door begins defining a different way of looking at the world. It's the beginning of the enterprise to create a Mishnah, to create a Gemara, both in Eretz Yisrael and in Bavel. It's a time of intense creativity, goes through the period of the Gaonim and so on. But what happens? This is what Meir Simcha points out. What happens is that by definition, that creativity is incapable of really dealing with massive change. Why? Because since after the time of the Chatimata Talmud, you don't have a Bezdin HaGadol, you can no longer argue on the Piskei Halachas that happened at the time of the Gemara. Since you can't argue against those Piskei Halachas, you're doomed. Because you're now stuck with a Torah that's based on precedence instead of creativity. And that signifies the end. So he sees that, again, without, I think, having our voice to all of these issues. But he sees that as the cause of Galut into new circumstances. Because he says what happens is that the loss of creativity drives people mad. And what happens is then that you lose all of the best and the brightest. So they'll go to university or whatever. They'll go away. And then what happens is, that's this famous Berlin equals Yerushalayim thing, you know. And people will come to believe that Berlin is really Yerushalayim. Umi Berlin tipatach ha-ra'a. That was his, you know, the beginning of the century, his vision of what was going to happen. And that's what made it such a famous piece. But what happens is, he says, you go to a new country, and the simplicity of the creativity. You have to recreate schools, you recreate shuls, you have to build communities. What's amazing is, during those periods, all of the artificialities disappear, because people are so involved in the simplicity of the creation of the simple things that the Mordechai is rebuilt. Now, as you find, like, all of the people that were active, the post-war activists, had no room for the politicking. And this is just, there's this simplicity of the Jewish experience. We need to be Jews again. We need to have schools again. What's an afkamina? They're co-ed, they're not co-ed. They have this sheet, they have that sheet. And we need to have Jewish schools. That's all. That was the concern. Right? I mean, intels, like, I mean, they had a co-ed school for the kids. What else are you going to do? You know? It wasn't even an issue. You do what you have to do. You're in the process of rebuilding. What happens in that process is that, by definition, you end up being creative. It's not simply the building per se. You have to be creative, because you can only, for instance, you can only build schools that are going to attract American kids. Right? So how do you attract an American kid to a European school? So that means, by definition, it has to be a shinui in the type of school. Let's say you'll incorporate limudei chol. That's a tremendous change that you never could have done without the trauma that you went through to make it happen. And it's not that we're going to argue on Beis Din. It's that we're a new sim, so to speak, okay? But l'maisa, we end up changing the halacha, okay? And it's like those who didn't change, so you have the Tricarta didn't change. So they fought against the Aguda that accepted Chinuch Atzmoi, I'm saying. So they ended up disappearing. They ended up becoming a meaningless cut, basically, which ended up losing all connection to Klal Yisrael and so on. Now it's a joke. It's time to go left. A couple of crazy people out there, you know, who cares, you know, with their foreign minister. They got some crazy American to be a foreign minister, support Arafat. That's where it goes. Because if you cannot change, and you're only going to, what do you mean our forefathers didn't do this and so on, you know, or the Brisker Rothstein on the Kazanish, how can you allow them to call and do it? You know that they were ready to close down Voloshin because the government insisted. So even if you're an honest, you can't have it. You know, Briskarov's famous response about the Maginot Line. You know, you want to keep shooting in the direction where the Germans aren't anymore, or do you want to shoot at the Germans? You know, what kind of sign is that? Our forefathers didn't do it. Thank you very much. Now the Germans came around the back. You know, you say, but this is the way we placed our guns. Let's keep shooting. It's not going to be very effective. But there's a deeper nekuda here, which is that the actual down and dirty experience of existence has changed. And that's a fundamental change, which actually started taking place, as the Zohar predicted, connected the period of the sixth millennium, which would be connected Bria Sa'adam, which is basically the Renaissance period. So that you have now, and the Zohar predicted that it would be a vast opening of Chokhmah, in which kids on the street would understand things that the greatest Chachamim didn't understand. It's interesting, you see the Mefarshei HaZohar say, you know, like, what is that supposed to mean, since we already know everything? it's exactly the same thing that you had in science, you know, where they want to close down the patent office, where they told people not to go into physics, you know, at the end of the 1800s, because everything's already discovered. Should better go into some other field. They didn't even know about radioactivity yet. Forget about quantum mechanics. All the major discoveries of physics were about to be made, and literally they were telling people there's no future in physics. You know, it's not, unless you like counting zeros and you want to make, you know, more and more refined measurements. That's all that's left to do. We already know everything there is to know. That's exactly the same thing. But the change that engenders is very profound, because what happens is that the simple experience of life is much more sophisticated. So in other words, let's say, I gave an example. If you'll have, once upon a time, somebody brings a carbon, So his shyness to the carbon is the fact that he has animals in his backyard, right? In other words, he has a vision of the animal as being noble, as being real, as being part of the simplicity of life, of the long-suffering, horse that's going to be dragging around his burden, of the cow that's going to be sitting there and docilely chewing its cud and accepting whatever it is. He has a sense of what an animal is, and he can relate himself to the animal on that basis. That's part of that whole romantic vision of the primitive, correct? We don't have that. So the primitive to us is very sophisticated. If you cannot, let's say you're now a yeshiva bacher, you don't know anything about it. You never saw an animal in your life. Maybe once they allowed you to go to the zoo, so you should be able to learn. Not if it's a Bittelsmann, but you should be able to learn the various carbonas. Your parents took you to the zoo once because little David was happy to go to the zoo so that he could learn about the dinim of carbonas that it'll say in the, the little primer book that they'll write about David's visit to the zoo. So just like little David is so happy when he wakes up in the morning to put on his tzitzis and make a broth. Of course, David, in reading this book and hearing it read to him, says, "Who the hell is this idiot?" But okay, Mamela. It begins at that point, a total divorce from, what is supposedly expected, and his inner knowledge that that's not true of anybody I know, but we'll play along with it, and what that does to the psyche of a child, Hashem Yirachem. You compare that to baby beluga.
What?
Baby beluga, you get into whales and agishmak it. That's something he can relate to. Sure, I'd love to go and meet a whale and have fun with the whales and so on. That he relates to. So. But David woke up in the morning and put on his tzitzis and made a bracha b'simcha rabba. That he doesn't relate to. Which means that it's a lie from beginning to end as far as he's concerned. There's some kind of conspiracy that he's aware of that's pretending that there's a world that doesn't exist, but since he has to continue to live, they'll pretend that that world exists. That's mamash what happens to him. That's why they go off to Derech, because they know there was no Derech.
I don't remember whether it was Shlomo or Meir's first day in school, but they learned about what a book was, different components of a book. And in the school facing them, they taught them about mezuzah, talking about 3 to 4 year olds.
I think this is deeper though. This, that it's a lie is a different nekuda. So what happens is our shaykes to the animal, lemaisa, can only come from the broadened appreciation of the alternatives that survive in mikra. In other words, if we don't have a concept of evolution, we have b'chol no shaykes to the animal. So our fundamental experience of reality demands a great deal of Mordechai's creativity at the time in which the potential of Mikra was understood to be the essence of the human condition. We lock that out by attempting to define things, correct? So Mela, you define things, you don't have room for Darwin. Because it's based on randomness, it's based on contingency, and it's not well defined. You understand what I'm saying? The level of creativity that is required in order to achieve a simple experience of reality is much higher than it once was. If I'm born into a shtetl, and the reality consists of having a job and getting married and working my rear end off all day in order to make enough money to eat, so I'll have enough on Shabbos to buy one piece of fish or whatever it is, that's a level of reality in which I am a noble savage. We no longer have the noble savage. So the level of the noble savage itself requires a breakthrough which takes you outside of the norms of society. You understand? The child that's born today doesn't have an area to experience life. His entire life is a lie. Either it's a lie created by from people or it's a lie created by Disney. But there's no life at all. So where does he become now the one who's capable of experiencing existence? There is no existence. There's only this entertainment or self-creation. He's lost. So the response of such a thing, if we were properly creative, would indeed be in defining existence for ourselves through a level of understanding which now opens up another level of existence, correct? somebody who today is capable of having a much deeper response, let's say, to looking up in the sky because of what he knows, not because of what he doesn't know. It used to be I looked up into the sky and I had a profound response.
Of wonder.
What was my profound response? Of wonder, of being in the center of the universe, of the sun going around me and the moon going around me and the stars going around me and knowing that everything was built on Bnei Adam and God was waiting and these patterns in the sky were the things that were kovei my mazal. Wow, it's unbelievable. Now the unknowledgeable person will look up at the sky and will see basically what he saw at the planetarium in his home thing of it. Yeah, you know, this is we're just another rock out there, you know, and so what's the big deal? So the one who has a deeper appreciation of the processes that allow for that rock to be what it is has an infinitely greater degree of wonder, but only after he achieves that understanding than the primitive at another time does. He's still a primitive, in the sense that he's living the most simple experiences of life, but he can only live those experiences by a deeper level of understanding of what things are. Same thing is true of his relationship to the animal. He's no longer thinking in terms of his relationship to the animal, up to the barnyard, or to his pet. He's thinking of much more profound relationships to the animal, of how it is that a primate should have a sense of justice, or what is the level of animal perception, or how is my mating behavior similar to the mating behavior of a worm, and so on and so forth. These are profoundly important things in which he senses the continued flow of life in a way that's much deeper than a primitive in a previous generation, even though it's also primitive. It's very earthy. What he achieves is basically the Adam min Adama directly.
So it'd be interesting why Shmini deals with Lehavdil and Tamei Batar, and all the different birds.
I'd say all of those aspects of it. I mean, clearly it's all animal oriented. That's part of Ayikra, is the animal orientation, language and the animal orientation. But I'm saying there's levels of animal orientation all within what I'm calling the primitive as opposed to the conscious. Correct. Somebody who has a profound, you take a look at Uncle Tungsten. What do you have over there? Amazing thing. You have the description by a guy whose life was chemistry and who, when quantum mechanics came into being, dropped chemistry. Why? Because he could no longer feel the chemicals. The sensuality of his description, I mean, the guy's a genius, Sacks. Did you read it?
Oh.
Fantastic book. It's Oliver Sacks, who ended up becoming a neurologist. And, you know, he wrote all those fantastic books, you know, about neurology. And then, they made the movie. He was the basis of the movie of Awakening. And he was the one that had done that therapy, you know, for sleeping sickness and so on. But he has an autobiography that he writes, which is called Uncle Tungsten, which is momish. I mean, it's an amazing book to read. Describes a child growing up in, you know, during the war, post-war, in England, in a Jewish home, you know, in which there's a complete mixture. I mean, for Stamford, it's Jewish content that's remarkable because it brings you back to a completely different generation of, you know, assumptions of Judaism. But, so it describes how, you know, to him what the Shabbos candles were, or what the metal, the relationship to the specific metal, the way that he became a connoisseur of different atomic weights and different ways in which things would interact with each other, and his love of chemistry and of the shape of a molecule, of the smell of something, of the colors that it would form, of the energy that it stored. It's remarkable to see a child that mamish lived chemistry. And then when it ended up becoming so ethereal, and so, you know, out of the realm of common experiences, in which he no longer felt he could be mischabrik to chemistry, or to be mischabrik to chemistry as a quantum physicist.
Algorithms.
Who's interested in that? You know, it lost all of its mystery, lost all of its kishmak for him. Okay, the brain is still plenty secretive, you know, so there he found him. He became a neurologist. But, I mean, Lemaise is saying that the level of the simple experience of a primitive, Bisman Hazeh, can only be achieved by utilizing many of the elements that were preserved by Mordechai in terms of the Mikra. So when that stops, when the creativity stops, there's a commitment against input, then it's hopeless.
That to him, Shoni, it was the Shoni, it was the change.
Maybe, that's interesting. Shoni Mechala, maybe. But clearly, it's not a coincidence that the paradigm has broken down. Mordechai's paradigm has broken down. I'm saying it needed to happen. It's programmed to happen. Because there's no way of recreating Yisrael out of Yadut. Yadut, on that level, serves as a repository for the elements that are Yisrael-oriented. The feelings, and the teres, and the experiences of Maimon Har Sinai, and so on. But the tremendous chiddush, the nature of Yisrael is an arm that fights its way through to from the Maisa Bereishis to the end of a world that is mitukan, can't come from a religious orientation. That's clear. It has to come from something that goes back to the levoy of the yayin that's mishumer uba mishayshis imei bereishis. Okay, so what he did was self-limiting. I'm describing how it's self-limiting. That Kima v'Kiblu can only exist if it's at the same time the acceptance of the commitment to Torah Shebaal Peh. The moment that Torah Shebaal Peh is castrated by saying that there's areas that are off-limits that can't be contemplated, then that means the destruction of the carry of Amalek, which was the Dafka incorporated into Torah, which is why we can't destroy Amalek, and the substitution of what we think is a world we'd like to have instead of the world it is. The moment that happens, you undo Kima v'Kiblu and you destroy the Mordechai Yehudi Tikkun, by definition. And that happens to be the point that we're at, so that we're waiting for the development of a paradigm that will allow for Geula and so on. And it's clear that everything is breaking down. But here you see within the Parsha, both elements of Yayin Zvai and the experiences of life Zvai.
Right.
So it's a really life upon the altar, you know. What's her name? Dillard. Did you ever read anything about Dillard? Annie Dillard has beautiful, beautiful, got a couple of beautiful books, but one of them was a Pilgrim at Tinker's Creek. At Tinker's Creek. She's very sensitive to nature and to the processes of nature and so on. She has a chapter there called The Fire on the Altar, which sees the whole development of life as Parsha Piyeshu on Mizbeach. Which is clear, that's what it is. That's why it occurs over here. The drive towards the development of greater complexity and a more achieving humanity is a fire. It's the pain of human existence. It's the Shalosh Matanos Teves, Lenot Akadosh Baruch Hu Alayu Yisurin. There's no way to avoid it. You know, it's the... That's like they say about the Swiss, you know. The Swiss had all this peace and ability to concentrate on science and to do whatever they wanted. And what came out of all those centuries? The cuckoo clock.
Oh, the cuckoo
clock. Mashenke, the real growth in the world was in the middle of the most horrific wars, and mostly as a result of the pressures of those wars. That's how it is. That's what Muhammad does. So it's a fire on the altar. It's a constant rape of what you would like, and that's it.
People living around the equator and the warm countries, where you just go out and you pick a fruit, and no struggle. You know, guys living up at the north, you know, it's cold. You gotta figure out how to keep warm throughout the winter, how to store things.
That's not. I mean, she views evolution as the fire on the altar, which is clearly the Nekud of Korbanos. I mean, without even recognizing it, she's Aymed on the element of Korbanos. That increased complexity is through the predations of an altar. It's a predator. There's no way to avoid it. It's predatorial elements. It's not a nice, happy, And that's the Shemini. The only time that you can have a Shaychus to the Mishkan is if you recognize that the Eishel on the Mizbeach is predatory. And that the mistakes, the desire to have things the way you want them, is horrifically destructive.
So we can forget about may all live happily ever after. Huh?
Yeah.
Too bad.
It's better only the good die young, you know. So don't be good.
Rabbi.
Okay, Rabbi Sain, that was...
You mentioned the beginning of the Megillah of that the Chachamim say we can't answer a question because we're like wine that has been stirred up in the Shemara.
Ah, that's nice. Yes, from Shemara. Yeah.
Right, that leaves an opening to something else to come.
Very... Well, you're saying the opposite from us. That should have given us more of a correct answer.
Well, yeah, well, it has to be an introduction to Mordechai.
Because
remember,
it's fascinating. I know, you're fascinating.
Okay.